It's May the 4th, and we have Fireman Kenny on the line. I thought we'd change up the theme just a bit this morning. Just, you know, for the day.
Perfect. And Rick, may the 4th be with you.
And with you also.
Well, good morning, Rick. Good morning, all the listeners. KMG 365, Fireman Kenny's on the air, helping you to stay safe in a world where danger never takes a vacation. And, oh, I did forget to mention, yeah, it is International Firefighters Day. So May the 4th is International Firefighters Day. So be sure to thank all of my fellow brothers and sisters on the line who are working today on this International Firefighters Day. And speaking of firefighters, so on my monthly shout-out, so my first shout-out is congratulations to Larry Schweckel on his retirement from the West Bend Fire Department. Fireman Larry was a familiar voice in West Bend when he had interviews on the old WBKV with Bob Bonifant. Larry became a paid-on-call firefighter in 1991 and hired full-time in 1995. Larry was a mentor to our younger firefighters and even made some of them his minions. We wish Larry good luck in his retirement. And this week is Arson Awareness Week, so thank you to Wisconsin State Fire Marshal Lisa Wilson and Special Agent in Charge Brian Kolar from the ATF for their interview on WIBD yesterday to speak on the topic. The theme for Arson Awareness Week is arson during civil unrest. Thank you to Brian Leithan, Special Agent in Charge at the Wisconsin Department of Justice, for setting up that interview.
And it was interesting chatting with them, a different topic, different perspective. And there is a link on the WIBD Facebook page for people who may have missed that yesterday and want to find out more about arson during unrest.
Yes, and so there. I think that a lot of times people don't realize that whether they're involved in a, they start out as a peaceful protest, and then things just seem to get out of control. And when those things get out of control and buildings start on fire, that is arson by definition. So that is setting a building intentionally on fire. And luckily, like a lot of buildings, like let's say I'll use Minneapolis as a prime example. There were a number of those buildings that someone started a fire, but they had sprinkler systems in them, and then the sprinkler suppressed the fire. There was enough evidence. There are people being prosecuted right now for starting those buildings on fire, and the evidence was preserved because whether the building had cameras on them, whether the incendiary devices had fingerprints on them, there were a number of people, Minneapolis and cities across the U.S., where people are being charged with arson and more than likely will serve jail time because of their participation in a very destructive process.
Absolutely. It was an interesting interview. So if you get a chance, you get a chance, go and check it out through the link on the Facebook page. Hey, speaking of sprinklers,
we have our monthly sprinkler saves, or also known as fires you never hear about, because there's no news in something that was stopped from happening. And as I pointed out, I'm an advocate of fire sprinkler systems and a dues-paying member of the National Fire Sprinkler Association, www.nfsa.org. Be sure to follow the National Fire Sprinkler Association on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. So we have four saves this month. So two are from Sheboygan and two are from Madison. So thank you to Battalion Chief Nick Noster of the City of Sheboygan Fire Department for sending me this one. On Saturday, April 3rd at 3:49 p.m., the City of Sheboygan Fire Department was dispatched to the Sunny Ridge Nursing Home through 3014 Erie Avenue for the report of fire alarm sounding. Firefighters found an activated sprinkler in a room where a fire had started. Fire crews remained on the scene to assist with salvage and cleanup. The cause of the fire is under investigation, and a great job by the Sunny Ridge Nursing Home staff for their efforts in reducing the spread of smoke in the building.
Nursing home fires are especially problematic.
Exactly. You have people who are unable to extricate themselves. So not only do we have to, we have a limited time to suppress the fire, but also dedicating resources to evacuating any residents who are not able to evacuate themselves. So that's why nursing homes are required to have sprinkler systems to suppress those fires. Should something happen, then it really becomes problematic, especially as, you know, the fire service sees more budget cuts and more reliance on mutual aid to get the firefighters to the scene quicker and be able to suppress that fire as well as rescue the occupants.
Not to mention the fact that, like hospitals, a lot of nursing homes have oxygen running in the walls and all that kind of good stuff, too, that makes firefighting more interesting.
Exactly. So those are the obstacles that we have to overcome. We do train on those obstacles, but again, we really have to make sure that those sprinkler systems are maintained and, again, having the staff trained to effectively control the spread of any fires by closing doors and making sure that occupants are in spaces where they're not in danger of the fire spread.
I want to talk a little bit more about training as we get further in here because I got a question for you, but we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Sure. Let's go back to sprinklers.
Okay, our second save also comes from the City of Sheboygan Fire Department. Sheboygan firefighters were dispatched to the Edgewater Power Plant at around 11 a.m. on Tuesday, April 20th for the report of a fire. They were met by the Edgewater Fire Brigade and found smoke from the plant's dust collector. The fire sprinkler system controlled the fire, and Sheboygan firefighters suppressed the remaining flames.
All right, and then moving on to the capital city.
Yeah, so we have two from the City of Madison Fire Department. Thank you to Ed Ruckriegel for sending me this one. On Friday, April 23rd at 5:05 p.m., Ladder Company 2 was dispatched to a facility on Research Park Boulevard for a machine on fire. Firefighters were met by employees who directed the crew to the proper location. The fire was contained in the machine in question thanks to an activated sprinkler head located just above it. Ladder 2 achieved final knockdown with a dry chemical extinguisher. Employees had safely evacuated the building as soon as the automatic sprinkler prompted the fire alarm to sound. And on that same day, a separate fire was caught early and extinguished by an automatic sprinkler system Sunday morning, April 25th. Firefighters responded to the 5600 block of Black Onyx Drive at 3:17 a.m. after a 911 caller reported flames showing from a balcony. When Medic 8 arrived, the fire appeared to be out with the help of a sprinkler activation on the second floor balcony. Ladder Company 8 accessed the balcony and confirmed there was no active fire anymore, though evidence confirmed a fire did occur. Firefighters verified that the fire did not extend past the siding into the building. Crews determined the fire was caused by a pillar candle that had been burning on the balcony above. Ooh. Nobody was displaced as a result of the fire. In each case, automatic fire sprinklers were instrumental in keeping the fires contained to their place of origin, resulting in limited damage and zero injuries or deaths.
And again, your friendly neighbors left their candle burning and it caused problems.
Well, and there again, I pointed this out on every time I talk about these in multifamily residential, you don't know what your neighbors are doing. So always try to choose an apartment building or a condo building that has a fire sprinkler system. Just because your neighbors, like let's say we talk about fireplaces. So you live in a multifamily residential building. You have fireplaces. Those chimneys need to be inspected every year. They need to be cleaned after they've been inspected if there's buildup in those chimneys. You don't know what your neighbors are doing. So make sure that you at least are protected by a fire sprinkler system so that when your neighbors make a mistake, you don't end up not having a place to live.
All right. Sounds good. I'm going to just... When we talked about training in the nursing home fire situation here, I want to just go back to, and you and I talked about it briefly just before we went on the air. We had this mess out on the highway that West Bend Fire and a number of other agencies responded to because we had, 157,000 cars in ditches in the snow.
Right, exactly. So a snowstorm occurred on a day that nobody was prepared for. because once the winter driving season is technically over, nobody's ready for when Wisconsin decides to dump more snow on you. So that morning was a very difficult morning. Multiple accidents in multiple jurisdictions. So it actually started on 41 north of 33. Allenton and Colesville were responding to that accident. Several accidents occurred as they were responding. So the West Bend Fire Department did send a paramedic unit to that incident. And then in Slingers area, there was another group of accidents. Then the West Bend Fire Department did also send a paramedic unit to that incident as well. At my counting, I believe there were 15 ambulances from multiple jurisdictions on Highway 41 at any given time, either treating, transporting, or responding to that incident. So, so make sure when weather turns bad, that's when people need to slow down. You need to be able to judge the road, and anytime the weather turns bad, other people are either going to slow down or do something that they shouldn't be doing. That means you. So all my listeners who come up to me and say everything I say is common sense, I know you guys slow down. I know you guys take caution, but make sure you're out there telling everybody else when the weather turns bad, rain, sleet, snow, all those things that the U.S. Postal Service delivers mail in, you make sure that you're telling your friends and relatives that they need to slow down in that weather.
Well, and Sheriff Schulteis and I talked about this. There's no way you can tabletop plan for an event like that. I mean, I know that departments, you know, in various, you know, police and fire and everybody does these training exercises. But how do you can't really train for this one.
Well, you sort of can. And like when we talk about our five E's of community risk reduction, engineering is actually one of them, because that's why we have the box cards. So the MABUS system, the mutual aid box alarm system, Slinger actually called, I believe it was box 21-1-3, and that actually gets everybody ready because they know about where they sit on those boxes. So as soon as Chief Schaefer started calling for that box, everybody was looking at their box cards, knowing about when they respond, and the Sheriff's Department then knows who to send and how many of what units to send. So like, let's say 21-1-3, go to the second alarm level. You know you've got 9 ambulances coming. You know you've got 4 fire engines coming. You know you've got a truck company coming with extrication equipment. So you can kind of do it. It is always chaotic. Like, let's say I know that the Allenton Fire Department, after they responded and transported from their incident, and then they responded back up 41 to help with Slinger's incident, and then they got stuck in traffic and had to walk quite a distance with the cot and their equipment to get to some of their patients. So you can't engineer and train for everything, but there are a number of things that we can do prior to the incident to kind of coordinate those efforts so that when people respond, it's very orderly and very well-defined as to what people are going to be doing when they get to those incidents.
You know, I was listening to it on the scanner, listening to it unfold from the first call of a small multi-vehicle accident and up to what it turned into. And basically, another time, just to credit our emergency dispatchers who handled that so well. And I mean, I'd have been at that point screaming, "Send everything! I don't care! Send it all!" You know,
right? But, right. And yeah, and as a former dispatcher, it does get chaotic. So I give the West Bend Fire Department or West Bend Police Department dispatchers and especially for that incident, the Washington County Sheriff's Department dispatchers, a lot of credit, because there's a lot of 911 calls, a lot of people in distress, and then incident after incident after incident, and it seems like you go from 0 to 60 when these happen. You've got your routine day-to-day stuff, and then all of a sudden you get these 30, 40, 50, 100 calls for all of these incidents happening in a very short period of time over an area that's not very big.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks for the, for going down the path on this one, because I just think it was very well handled by all the emergency responders, and also by tow truck operators and the bus company and everybody else who got involved that day. So it was quite quite the event, and I'm sure it's going to be part of folks' reviews of practices and so on to see how well it worked.
Yep. Yeah, and so we'll end, we usually do reviews after those incidents, and I'm sure the Washington County Training Officers Association will be taking that up as well, just because even though so things are chaotic, I think from what I heard, it did go well, but there's always ways to improve upon stuff. So if whatever they, whatever little deficiencies they found, whether it's communication, whether it's response, they will take that up. And if anything happens like that again in the future, then the incidents will go even smoother than this one had gone.
Absolutely. Emergency Medical Services Week is coming up.
Yes, it is. So May 16th to the 22nd is the 46th annual National Emergency Medical Services Week. In 1974, President Gerald Ford authorized EMS Week to celebrate EMS practitioners and the important work they do in our nation's communities. This year's theme is This is EMS, Caring for Our Communities. The National Association of Emergency Medical Technicians partners with the American College of Emergency Physicians to lead annual EMS Week activities. Together, NAEMT and ASEP are working to ensure that the important contributions of EMS practitioners in safeguarding the health, safety, and well-being of their communities are fully celebrated and recognized. So what a lot of people may not know is there are different levels of education and licensure for pre-hospital providers in the state of Wisconsin. So each level has strict training requirements and a defined scope of practice. They are emergency medical responder, emergency medical technician, advanced emergency medical technician, and paramedic. So our lowest level of licensure is the emergency medical responder. We call them EMRs, and that has about 50 hours of training. So when, as I talk about the skills and medications, each one builds on it. So what I've listed earlier, will the other levels will be able to do. So like emergency medical responders, the skills and medications include non-invasive airway adjuncts, oxygen, cardiac defibrillation, wound bandaging, spinal immobilization, and splinting.
I think that's the level that my niece works at out in she's a volunteer out in Ontario on the little community volunteer ambulance service out there. And I think that's what her level is at this point.
Okay. Yeah, so we have a lot of EMRs in the county. So we have several of our fire departments that have first responders that don't have EMTs or transporting ambulances. So that would be St. Lawrence, Colesville, Boltonville, Fillmore that are at the EMR level. And again, like they get there first and extremely helpful. And as a matter of fact, I've taught some of them as part of my job as an instructor with Moraine Park Technical College. So a lot of our first responders and EMRs do a really, really great job with their level of knowledge and their commitment to being able to help patients in need prior to the arrival of the transporting ambulance.
Sure, sure. Our community conversation this morning with Fireman Kenny continues, and we're ready to talk about EMTs.
Yep. So emergency medical technicians, or EMTs, have about 180 hours of training. However, that soon is going to be expanded to even more hours of training, as well as the additional ride time that these people are supposed to do. So as of right now, they have to have 10 ride-along patient contacts during their training. Beyond the EMR training, EMTs can administer albuterol for difficulty breathing, aspirin for heart attacks, epinephrine for allergic reactions, oral glucose for diabetics experiencing low blood sugar, and intranasal Narcan for drug overdoses.
Okay.
And then we move up to the advanced emergency medical technician level, the AEMT. That is about 170 hours above and beyond EMT. AEMTs can start IV lines, administer dextrose intravenously for diabetics experiencing low blood sugar, nitroglycerin for chest pain and heart attacks, and perform intraosseous needle injections, which are needles that go into the tibia or humeral head to administer medication. So if you can't get an IV, then we have a drill that can get into the bone to deliver fluids and medications.
Say, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, it's actually pretty effective. So the because a lot of times when people have gotten to the point where they're really sick or really injured, having a peripheral IV can be really difficult. So then being able to drill that into the bone is really good for being able to get medications, and it's a lot faster than starting an IV.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. And then our highest level is paramedic. So paramedic is approximately 1,100 hours above and beyond the EMT level. So you don't have to be an advanced emergency medical technician to become a paramedic. You only have to go through EMT, but it is really helpful if you go EMT, then AEMT, then go to the paramedic level. It's a bigger commitment, but again, like I tell my students, take each level and take it with a different instructor. So that way you get a different perspective on treatment modalities as well as all of the training and instruction you get a different perspective from it. So the 1,100 hours is the minimum for the paramedic. That's a one-year technical diploma, and that's about 38 credits. There's also an associate degree that is about 70 credits, depending on which college is providing the program. So I went on for the associate degree because I needed anatomy and physiology, advanced anatomy and physiology, and microbiology. So that actually helps me when I'm teaching at the paramedic level when I get a chance to teach the paramedic students.
Okay.
So as well as the items noted earlier, paramedics can interpret ECGs, perform manual defibrillation, as well as give numerous medications for pain, heart abnormalities, and sedation. Paramedics can also perform chest decompressions, which is sticking a needle in the chest to release trapped air, pericardiocentesis, which is sticking a needle in the heart to release trapped fluid, cardiac pacing, and cricothyrotomies, which is cutting a hole in the neck to help people breathe.
You saw it on MASH where Father Mulcahy used his pen. We just want to mention
exactly. That. So that actually does work. Luckily, I have never done one, but hopefully that is between now and the time I end my paramedic career. That is one that I hope I don't ever have to run across. So the West Bend Fire Department has a paramedic service. So just so everyone is aware, all of our shift personnel are all of our people who work the 24-hour shifts are paramedics. The training officer and I are also paramedics. The only ones who are not are the chief and the deputy chief. The deputy chief is still in I-99, so he can perform advanced life support skills and medications. So in the rest of Washington County, the Germantown Fire Department upgraded to the paramedic level in January of last year. The Jackson Fire Department also recently upgraded their level of care to paramedic. And the Hartford Fire Department, congratulations to them. They became a paramedic service as of May 1st. There's a private ambulance company that provides paramedic service for Slinger residents. The West Bend Fire Department also has a paramedic intercept program, which sends two paramedics in an SUV to meet EMTs and AEMTs from the Newburgh, Allenton, and Keewaskum Fire Departments. And we also assist fire departments in portions of Dodge, Fond du Lac, and Sheboygan counties should the need arise. And if you include that service, almost all or all of Washington County has paramedic level service available for life-threatening emergencies.
So we
for
are
more information. Oh, go ahead.
So we're pretty fortunate here, and
we are very fortunate. So we have a lot of really great paramedics in this county who are dedicated to providing emergency medicine and as well as education to the public on any of the things that we need to perform, skills and medications to help keep people alive, and not just keep them alive, but also improve their productivity and improve their recovery because of the things that we do early on with our interventions. So there's a lot of people walking and talking today, and I think I've talked about this a number of times on the radio. In 2016, we had a number of saves, whether it was because of the people that had performed CPR and used AEDs prior to our arrival, or because of the outcomes from what we've done with our medications and our skills, that there were people that were walking and talking with minimal deficits after an event, such as a heart attack or being in cardiac arrest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, tip of the hat to all those folks in Washington County and across the country.
Yep. Yeah. So the thing is, make sure that we continue to support our emergency medical services. So the biggest problem is there isn't enough support for the pre-hospital financially. So let's say, I'll use Milwaukee as a prime example. So the City of Milwaukee Fire Department provides advanced life support paramedic service. The city was divided up into four separate areas for four private ambulances, and they used to make money on the ambulance transports for the non-emergency stuff or the minor emergencies that didn't require paramedic interventions. So when I was in college, I worked for Bell Ambulance, and for a little while I worked for Medicare Ambulance. Well, recently, because of cuts in Medicare and Medicaid and because of the lack of increases from insurance reimbursement, two of the companies now want to pull out of their contract. So a larger corporation, Midwest Medical, I believe it was, had bought Paratech, which had previously purchased Medicare ambulance, and they now want to pull out of the city because they're losing money. And the same thing happens, like, let's say, up north, where if you're up in the northern part of Wisconsin, there's fewer volunteers, no money to pay people, so you could wait 20 or 30 minutes for an ambulance if you're having some sort of event, some sort of injury. So there really needs to be a greater support for emergency medical services throughout the U.S., whether it's increased reimbursement from the insurance companies and from Medicare and Medicaid, or some sort of other support to help continue to pay for the ambulances, personnel, and supplies to get ambulances to you in case you have something happening.
All right, sounds good. And let's give them what's the website to go to again?
For more information on Emergency Medical Services Week, visit the American College of Emergency Physicians website, www.acep.org.
And otherwise, visit your local fire station and take them cookies.
Correct. That, we love cookies. Or something healthy like apples or something like that. So, but an apple a day will keep the doctor away.
Sure. But, cookies are fun, too.
Yes.
So, all right, we got to wrap up here, but let's talk about, we've got some interviews scheduled yet this month. Let's talk about those quick.
All right, so we've got upcoming events for May. So May is Stop the Bleed Month, and also Stop the Bleed Day is May 20th. So Stop the Bleed Month is helping to prevent extra bleeding from traumatic injuries. So people learn how to use bandaging to stop profuse bleeding from injuries. So you can go to www.stopthebleed.org. This month is also Stroke Awareness Month. So we have Sam Nolan. She's the former stroke coordinator from Fratert. So she will be on WIBD on May 17th. Trauma Awareness Month. So Fratert Trauma Coordinator Ginger Knapp will be on WIBD on May 24th. May is also Building Safety Month. It's Water Safety Month. So we will have Julie Hefter, who is the executive director from the Association of Aquatic Professionals, trying to nail down a date for her, but she will be on WIBD for an interview on Water Safety Month.
And that's going to be an interesting interview because I've seen, we've exchanged a few emails, and she sent me some links on things and adjustments that have been made in water safety over the last year. That one is going to be, I think, an especially interesting interview.
Yes, And Julie is very active as a leader in the water safety, especially for water parks and that sort of thing. So she will always, and she's also a great interview. She is way more polished than I could ever hope to be as far as like not the ums and ahs. So she is very good. She keeps the interest of the listeners. Whenever that interview is, make sure everybody listens for Water Safety Month. And then it's also National Electrical Safety Month, Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month, the National Safety Stand Down to Prevent Workforce Falls Week is May 3rd to the 7th. This week is Teacher Appreciation Week, which is May 3rd to the 7th. So make sure to appreciate a teacher for all the so they've taught you with the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's National Police Week is May 9th. To the 15th, so make sure to bring our fellow brothers and sisters in blue some donuts, especially Dunkin' Donuts is open in town, so they will appreciate that. Home Fire Sprinkler Week is May 16th to the 22nd, so hopefully we can get Marty King from the National Fire Sprinkler Association on WIBD during that week, and then National Safe Boating Week is May 22nd to the 28th.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. Thanks to all the listeners. Hopefully everybody learned something today. And so KMG 365, Fireman Kenny is returning to quarters.